Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
There it is. A little upbeat music to start your Saturday. Hope you're all doing well. I'm Mike Blue. This is Fantasy Sports Today. I'll be here for the next 3 hours. A lot on the slate today, obviously. For all you racing fans, I know very little about horse racing, so I love the Kentucky Derby, though. I would note, and I believe I've said on this program, on my sports bucket list, I've gotten a chance to see some pretty cool stuff, but on my sports bucket list, I think the Kentucky Derby resides at number one. It's the one thing I haven't done that I've always really wanted to do. Obviously, I'd love to go to a Super Bowl, which I have not done to date, but Kentucky Derby is the one that I'd always want to go with a bunch of friends or party it up and have a good time, which I've always heard is great. Kentucky Oaks. I had a friend that was at the Kentucky Oaks yesterday. I've heard from many people due to the craziness of the Derby, the Oaks is where you want to be. You want to be there on Friday at the track all day. A little bit less people, easier to get around and all that kind of good stuff. But we'll bring in Kevin Walsh. We'll talk about the sports of the day that we can talk about intelligently or relatively so. So first of all, Kev, how are you doing?
Not bad, Mike. Quite the start to the program there.
Yeah, I had no plan on talking about the Derby, but I just thought of it as I was getting into it. I was like, oh, yeah, the Derby's today. Might as well kick it off. And it's, hopefully a nicer day a little bit later here in the New York area. A little overcast this morning, but looking forward to getting out there on the soccer field with my kids later and all that kind of stuff. But the big news last night, Major League Baseball, Albert Pujols, which we prefaced, I guess, last time we were doing this show, which is a couple of weeks ago. 3,000 hit club gets it last night, same night as there was a no-hitter for the Dodgers. The first time that's ever happened, no-hitter, 3,000th hit on the same day. Pujols, widely considered to be one of the greatest right-handed hitters of all time, joins an even more exclusive club of a 3,000-hit, 600-home-run club. That includes now him, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez.
We were first on that. That's our stat. I stand by that.
Yeah, and I messed it up last time, too. I didn't know who was in it. It was a
we did that like a month ago, I feel.
We did. So, ultimately he gets it. We knew that it was coming. I'm happy to see that. You know, good news for him. Pressure's off, all that kind of good stuff. Obviously, he's in an extremely elite category. I was looking up some stuff about the greatest right-handed hitters of all time because he's certainly in that pantheon. And these are really the guys: Hank Aaron, Miggy Cabrera, Jimmy Fox, Willie Mays, Albert Pujols, Manny Ramirez, Frank Robinson, and Mike Trout making his way in there. So
A-Rod?
That's really your greatest right-handed hitters of all time. And yeah, you'd put A-Rod in there as well, clearly. I don't know where he goes on that list. These debates can be had on shows longer than ours and including that aren't getting to as many topics as we are today. But clearly Pujols is the man. Now, you're a much younger guy than me. Mm. So probably in some respects you hold Pujols at a
yeah.
I mean, I hold him in very high regard, but probably even a little bit higher for you
because
you grew up with that guy just dominating baseball.
So there was a point where I kind of fell somewhat out of touch with baseball. I guess maybe it was a low point with the Yankees, whatever it may be. And I remember I asked my brother, who was still always watching baseball, religiously following the stats, and I was like, hey, does Pujols still win MVP every year? Is that still a thing? And he was like, he actually kind of slipped off a little bit when he left, and then all of a sudden like he was kind of back. But, I mean, it felt like literally every year he was with the Cardinals, he won MVP. Like, that's just what it felt like. He was that good.
Well, in his first 10 seasons, he was a top four MVP vote all those years except one, when he came in ninth. And he won rookie of the year. He won three MVPs. He came in second four times.
That's crazy stuff.
He was right around there all the time. I mean, the first decade of Albert Pujols' career is amongst the greatest hitting decades of all time. You know, you go to his Baseball Reference, is chock full of leader categories. He won a batting title. He obviously won two home run titles. He won one RBI title, but, you know, regularly up there on base percentage. His on base percentage to this day is at .385 as a career. This year, you know, look, last year in 150 games, he hit .241. That's not the stuff that he used to do. He's still a 20-homer, 100-RBI guy. This year, six homers, 19 ribbies, .256 to start off the year. His on-base is .284. So, you know, he's in decline, but he's also 38 years old. I don't think there's anybody that expects these guys to keep putting up numbers the way they once did when everybody was enhanced. So, there you go. I mean, I'm happy for him, I suppose. And he was already in the Hall of Fame, so this is just another notch on his belt for him to build an even wider Hall of Fame career. You know, if you're an Angels fan, you probably are happy for him, but at the same time, realize that you still owe him close to $90 million.
That's true. Well, yeah. This, though, makes me think
the
about...
The next 3 years, they owe him 28, then 29, then 30, and then he's got a 10-year, $10 million personal services contract that begins once the player contract expires, so he's going to get like a $1 million annuity until 2031.
Albert's fine is what this boils down to. Yeah. But it makes me think about his teammates.
.257 in the bank so far, Kev.
Trout's the same thing. He's been top two MVP every year, but last year he finished fourth, and that's only because he missed almost 50 games.
Yeah.
That's kind of just another perspective thing of, one, how good Pujols was, but how special what we are seeing from Trout is. And I don't know how lost that is on people. I mean, everybody knows he's the best player.
Oh, it's lost on people. I think in many ways, look, baseball experts and people that do stuff like this are very aware of Mike Trout's historic place in baseball, I think. But as a friend of mine often says, the problem with baseball is that if Mike Trout delivered a pizza to somebody's house in middle America, they probably have no idea who he is. Mm. He doesn't have superstar recognition like that. He's relatively understated. He plays on the West Coast. Baseball is an increasingly regional sport. So all of those things come into play. That's more of a baseball issue than it is a Mike Trout issue. He can only do so much, and he's done just about as good as anybody has in the first 5-6 seasons of their career. So there you go. That's Albert Pujols. I can get into that game in a minute, but also wanted to touch on the fact that there was a no-hitter. Dodgers pitched a combined no-hitter last night, four different pitchers led by starter Walker Buehler. They shut down the Padres 4-0 in Mexico. Actually, it was in Monterrey, Mexico. Interesting thing about Pujols, he shared his previous milestone of 600 home runs with a no-hitter as well. Edinson Volquez threw a no-hitter for the Marlins. So he's the 32nd member of the 3,000-hit club, first to join since Adrian Beltre with the Rangers last July. Let's see, what else? I'm just trying to think of some other stuff. I mentioned all this kind of stuff. Pujols came, three MVPs all came in the National League with the Cardinals, 2005, 2008, 2009. He's one of only three players with 3,000 hits and three Most Valuable Player awards. Do you know who the other two are?
Hank and A-Rod?
A-Rod is one of them. A-Rod is one. That's correct. The other one is Stan Musial.
Mm.
So,
yes, I know who Stan Musial is.
I know, but he's also he's one of those guys that, again, baseball people understand his greatness, but he sometimes gets forgotten when talking about other greats. Stan Musial is right at the top. Okay, so let's go talk about the Dodgers combined no hitter. So first combined no hitter in franchise history, and their 23rd overall no hitter dating back to June 22nd, 1891. Last no-hitter came in 2014 when Kershaw blanked the Rockies at Dodger Stadium. That total of 23 is the most for any franchise, five more than the Red Sox and the White Sox. By the way, the team that they no-hit, the Padres, still don't have one. Tony Sakata, I think, mentioned that on the show a couple of weeks ago. It's the last combined no-hitter took place on September 1st, 2014, when Cole Hamels had started for the Phillies. So there you go. So you have that. Liberatore closes it out. He caps off the no-hitter. So interesting achievement there. And Fernando Valenzuela is throughout the first pitch last night. So that's kind of a cool moment. Obviously, he's Mexican and playing the game in Monterrey against the Padres, all that coming together. Kind of cool that those fans got to witness a combined no-hitter.
I like combined no-hitters. I heard some... I think they're kind of cool when, like, the whole team has to work.
He's got combined no hit at one point by the Astros. It took like six pitchers.
I have that exact box score up because I actually do remember that from when I was younger.
Yeah,
and I just pulled it up. It was in 2003. It was June 11th. They won 8-0, and they got combined no hit. Roy Oswalt started that game just like I thought. Billy Wagner closed it out.
Yeah. So
guys. I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, combined no-hitters, it's not as cool. I think it's kind of cool, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. It just doesn't, it's kind of funny because the players involved are probably psyched about it at the time, but they don't get to, normally
there's
a
no
starting
legacy
pitcher
with
get
it.
To tout. Yeah, starting pitcher would get to tout the fact that he threw a no-hitter. Now he can just say, I was a part of a no-hitter. You know, Walker Buehler isn't going to, you know, 50 years from now. Isn't going to be talking about his no-hitter necessarily. He'll say he was part of a no-hitter. But so with all those events last night, those big events, the performance of the night in Major League Baseball was Gerrit Cole, who George Kurtz and I have on our fantasy team. George drafted a brilliant pitching staff. Our hitting is a little banged up and leaves something to be desired, but our pitching is lights out, and Gerrit Cole was the man last night. And that was a pretty interesting game because he actually had a no-hitter going for a little while in this game. It was broken up in the fifth inning. It was saved by Josh Reddick on a crazy diving catch in the fifth inning. And then the next batter, Chris Owings, lined a double off him in the fifth. In the second, third, and fourth innings, he struck out the side. He struck out 9 of 10 batters in that stretch, the only other batter being a walk. He only gave up one hit, so 16, and it was I believe he only gave up one hit. Let me just double check that. My computer's frozen up, so I apologize, but it was a 16 strikeout, one hit shutout performance for Gerrit Cole. Tremendous. Obviously that happened at long after I had gone to bed. Jared Dyson for the Diamondbacks had a crazy, I mean, absolute end of the year web gem last night, where he stole a George Springer. No, I'm sorry. He stole a home run from Jake Mariznick. So, if for those of you that haven't seen, you got to get online, go to MLB.com, check out that video. It was a tremendous play by Gerard Dyson. I always say Jared, but it's Gerard Dyson. So, in any event, 16 Ks. He is now. Major League Baseball all-time leader for most strikeouts through seven starts with a new team. He broke Chris Sale's record in Boston just a year ago when he had 73 strikeouts. So 77 strikeouts for Gerrit Cole through seven starts. He's obviously on fire.
Did you put anything into this Astros pitchers cheating stuff? I feel like, I don't know how much attention it got. I didn't feel like it got much attention, but Trevor Bauer was the one who kind of accused of him. McCullers and him had somewhat of a back and forth. And I hate to sour what is currently such a dominant stretch by Gerrit Cole, but we also have, I think, Charlie Morton right now leads all of baseball in ERA. We saw Verlander have a 14 strikeout performance the other day.
Explain the background of the accusation.
Pretty much what Trevor Bauer is saying is that the MLB is being selective in who they target and call out and pretty much punish for using pine tar or an illegal substance, which I believe his exact words were it increases the spin rate, which I believe then obviously allows you to throw more strikeouts and things. of that nature. And he actually, in his back and forth with McCullers, was like, I'm actually not against it. It's something that would be better for the game. And there was a number of reasons that he gave. And he said, look, in all in time, it'll come out. It was an interesting thing to me, to where he didn't even seem like his problem was more so with the Astros, but more so with baseball for not allowing, for basically, you know, an illegal substance to become legal and commonly used throughout baseball. It's tough because you don't want to put a black mark on an organization based off a Twitter accusation. But it is certainly eye-popping to see what the entire staff pretty much for Houston is doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, with that in general, clearly I've heard this before. There's very often been situations where teams don't want to call out pitchers that they see something on their hat. They are hesitant to call out players because they probably know one of their staff is doing it too. But if it gets, I'm trying to think of the Yankee pitcher that this happened to a couple of years ago, Mike Pineda. Michael Pineda had a bunch of residue on his hat in Fenway. And it was the second time against the Red Sox that this had been noticed. The first start around, Mike Pineda, they didn't say anything. The second start around, it is noticeable on television. He's got a wet spot on his hat, and he's going to it. And then finally, the Sox called him out. And, you know, he was reprimanded for it. So there is a hesitance because I think teams know that some pitchers on their staff are doing it too. But it does sound a little bit like sour grapes when these guys are off to a good start. So it's like, they're totally cheating.
For some just quick perspective, of the guys in their staff, McCullers, Verlander, Cole, and Morton are within the top 19 in total strikeouts through all of baseball, with Cole and Verlander being 1 and 3 respectively. And Verlander is first, Cole is third, and Morton is fifth right now in ERA in the AL. So again, that's one, it's perspective on just how incredible their staff has been to start the season, but it does let you know perhaps, you know, why we're having this discussion. I mean, Justin Verlander was really good last year when he got to Houston, but it's not like he was a Cy Young candidate coming over from Detroit. Garrett Cole was somewhat slipping when he was over in Pittsburgh, and I mean, Charlie Morton's really never done this before.
Yeah, so Garrett Cole with the big performance. He gets the win with the 16 strikeouts. He drops his ERA to 1.42 on the season. We're going to come back, talk about Matt Harvey, possible landing spots, and more. It's Fantasy Sports Today. Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh for the next 3 hours. We'll be back on Fantasy Sports Radio after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Yeah, a little party in the USA. You know how you make that party even bigger, Kev Walsh?
Tell me, Mike.
I know you've heard about the DailyRoto.com Dollar Month here on the network, but I want to put it in context for you. Let's say you buy a lottery ticket. You pay your dollar, pick a bunch of numbers, and that's it. You then clutch the ticket and hope. Now let's say that you try DailyRoto.com Dollar Month. You pay your dollar, get access for 30 days, and you're transported into a world that has produced 5 millionaires. Take destiny into your own hands. Go to DailyRoto.com and enter the code $1. That's O-N-E dollar. That's DailyRoto.com and enter the code $1. So take part in Dollar Month. Good stuff right there. So I use DailyRoto constantly during my DFS play, whether it's MLB or NBA during the regular season and clearly for NFL. They do a bunch of great golf content. I haven't dipped my toe in the water there. Tony Cincotta, who will probably be on with us at 11:40, he does it all the time. So he can even talk to you about upcoming golf tournaments and current golf tournaments and all that kind of stuff. So let's turn. We are going to talk. And by the way, if you want to get in touch with us today, please do so via Twitter. That's at FNTSY Radio I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. And give us a call at 844-843-6879. Hopefully you're listening on the Fantasy Sports Radio app, but if you're not and you're listening on TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country, thank you. Appreciate it. So, Matt Harvey. So yeah. We're both here in New York. We're both Yankees fans, but clearly this finally comes to an end. We knew it was going to end soon. Didn't know how. They end up designating him for assignment. Obviously, there was talk of him potentially going to the minors, staying in the bullpen. But he and his agent both feel that he is a starting pitcher. Obviously, that's the quickest way to earn big money. He's not going to get that from anybody just yet. But, potential landing spots. I've seen a lot of speculation. Nando DeFino, our very own Nando DeFino, who's a baseball junkie, was saying the Pirates are a possibility, the Astros, a couple of different options. The Yankees, as a good friend of mine said, if George was still alive, he'd be on the Yankees by today. And I don't think that'll be the case now. I mean, it's intriguing because the Yankees do need an arm now with Montgomery down and Sonny Gray pitching erratically. Let's just say that. His last start out was good, but he hasn't been good since he came to the Yankees. It's intriguing, but I think it's likely that Harvey finds his way out of New York. Could be Miami. You know, people are going to see that as an option because he holds Jeter in such high regard, and it would be a no-pressure place to pitch. The one thing I want to say before you comment is that it right now the perception is that what a disaster this was. Mm. But I have to hand it to our own Mike Florio here. You can find him on Twitter at Michael. Oh, I just lost his tweet. Just give me a second. Michael F. Florio. But he is a diehard Mets fan. And I think his sentiments about this are good to remember because it all looks terrible now. But there is a time during which, here's his thread. Harvey. It's easy to make fun of Matt Harvey now. This is, again, Michael F. Florio on Twitter. It's easy to make fun of Matt Harvey now, but the Mets went through a very rough stretch from 09 on, and Harvey brought hope back to the organization, helped them win a pennant. It's sad what's happened. He debuted on his 21st birthday, and he attempted to do a shot for every strikeout he had. He was at Harvey's better game against Strasburg, and he's saying Harvey was. He was at a start against the Cubs and a lot of bad outings over the last two seasons. He said, thank you for everything at Matt Harvey 33. So I think a lot of people are going to pile on. Harvey didn't help himself in this regard leading up to last week, running up to L.A. for a restaurant opening when the team is in San Diego for a series. Look, he did a lot of stupid stuff. I think there'll be a day in which he would admit to that. Today's may not be that day, but it should be remembered that he did have an important role in helping the Mets turn it around to respectability. Now, there are going to be people that will pile on and say, oh, the Mets are a joke of an organization and they were terrible last year. And I get it, but they were in the World Series just a couple of years ago. And if they pitch well this year, nobody would doubt that they could be a playoff team. It's not looking that like that at the moment, but we understand that there's potential there, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to take in when it comes to the Mets and the reaction to this, specifically on Harvey. I feel like an analogy here, and bear with me. I feel like it's comparable when you're in that fifth grade class and you have the really easy teacher who allows you to joke around and kind of do whatever you want, and then they're out for the day, so the other fifth grade teacher comes in, watches the class, and they're a real hard ass, and you can't seem to adjust, and that's how you get in trouble, because... Not to put all the blame on Terry Collins, because it was more so he didn't have enough backing, I think, from upper management. Because we saw a lot of the Mets guys just really do whatever they want, right? Like, we saw the same thing when it came to Syndergaard and the fact that they told him stop putting on all the muscle and he did whatever he wanted, and we saw where that landed him. And I feel like Harvey kind of felt like he had that free rein. And Mickey Callaway came in, and look, credit to the guy. He was absolutely not going to allow things to be ran the same way. And he put a lot of pressure on Harvey to be better, and he really wasn't going to simply allow Harvey to go out there and do whatever he want. Now, they didn't designate him for assignment because he went up to L.A. It's because he was bad, and it's because he felt like there are teaching philosophies that he has that can make Harvey a better guy. He feels like people can improve coming out of the bullpen, and it's something that he has had some success with in the past, but Harvey was never open to it. So they put him in the bullpen, but with him having such a closed mind, it was never going to work. Then he obviously felt that the next move was for them to move him down to the minors, and Harvey was never going to take that. And that's kind of how we get to this point. So there are a lot of people to blame here. I mean, listen, there's another thing I saw on Twitter that was a really great point. Harvey got a lot of flack for not wanting to pitch an excess amount of innings when he came back from the big surgery, but he did so to appease the people and what management basically was asking, and he's never been the same since. There are a lot of people at fault here, and anybody who thinks that Harvey is blameless is wrong, but anybody who also thinks that this is 100% a Matt Harvey problem is wrong. Now, I don't know if Matt Harvey is ever going to be fixable. It is ironic, I think, the timing of this, where the Yankees lose their fifth starter and he all of a sudden becomes available, because pretty much every single time he pitched well, Yankees fans, because Yankees fans can sometimes be jerks to Mets fans, were like, man, he's going to look great in pinstripes. They couldn't help themselves. So it is ironic, yeah. And maybe they'll take a look. Maybe they'll see. But the Yankees are, I mean, just like, you know, we're saying that the Mets are going to do this because they're trying to be serious. The Yankees are trying to be, you know, just as serious. They have much higher expectations, I would say, coming into the year than what the Mets had. So it's not like they're just going to be able to throw a bone to Harvey and figure it out. If they bring Harvey in and he's horrible, well, they're not just going to allow him to keep going. So that could make things spiral. And I don't really know what's the best situation for Harvey. I definitely think change of scenery is ideal. But in the hypothetical sense that, say, he goes to the Yankees, I don't think that we can necessarily pretend that this entire thing is a mental block. His stuff is not as good as it once was. So maybe he comes back to the Yankees and game one looks awesome, and all of a sudden he finds his groove and he settles into, you know, third guy in the rotation, quality level guy. That's great. But also he gets shelled start one with the Yankees, and then they release him. And then we're looking at a real spiral of a situation here. So it really is tough to pinpoint what's an ideal landing spot, too, when I do still believe that this guy, more likely than not, would rather be in Miami, L.A., New York, than, say, be able to go to the Cincinnati Reds and figure this thing out.
Yeah, I mean, well, Miami's an option if he wants to still... Look, if he wants to still be a party guy, because he thinks he's still a celebrity, that's part of the problem. A, he's 29 years old. His last few seasons, this year he's 0-2. He's got a 7 ERA. Last year he was 5-7 with nearly a 7 ERA. In 2016, he was 4-10 with a 4.86 ERA. You know, he hasn't pitched 100 innings in those previous two seasons. Clearly, he was coming back off of thoracic outlet syndrome surgery one time, but when he did come off the shoulder, the Tommy John surgery, when he spent the entire 2014 season on the shelf, he came back. He was 13-8, 2.71 ERA, 29 games started. You know, he threw almost 200 innings. Clearly, he had rested well and he had pitched well, but the thoracic outlet thing, it has been totally different when he came back from that. And now he's a 29-year-old pitcher who hasn't had success since 2015. You know, any sustained success. That's a really long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wants to pick and choose, I want to be in LA or Miami or stay with the Yankees. I mean, you're just putting a bow on the end of your career. You know, like, there is an opportunity for him to turn it around. He's not going to be the $300 million pitcher that he once expected to be, but there is an opportunity for him to earn some money if he went somewhere and turned it around. Nando DeFino, again, he threw out the Tigers. Chris Bosio is there as a pitcher, and he's turning some things around. He's well-respected and working with pitchers and maybe getting them to fix some things. But who knows? Maybe it's not fixable.
Well,
that's the million-dollar question.
One of the things that I do think is more important than ever, right? Because, again, I do feel like it is foolish to give Matt Harvey all of the blame. But his attitude and that demeanor where he, like I said, with the fifth grade teacher, that he didn't adjust to the room. And at no point was Matt Harvey, it seemingly, ever going to give the I'm going to do what's best for the team statement. I got stuff to figure out, but I'm going to figure out in the way that they want to, because all I want to do is help this team win. He's not going to show
comparison. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a comparison, because I thought of it as you were talking about his attitude. And can you blame Harvey? Can you blame the Mets? Can you blame them both? What happened here in New York with the Knicks? There are many people that understand the type of player that Carmelo Anthony is, and that he's a numbers guy on the offensive side of the ball. He can't defend, and he likes to get up his shots, right? Many would call him sort of a selfish basketball player in that he's just really looking for his shots, right? Mm. He's an elite scorer, was an elite scorer in the league. But as it played out towards the end, with him getting paid over $25 million, and there was effectively, you know, Phil Jackson threw him under the bus as many times as he could, Carmelo stayed quiet. And by the end of it, even though the Knicks fans knew that he needed to move on, nobody was really blaming Carmelo anymore for everything that was going on. It was the organization's fault. It was Phil's fault. And Phil somehow eventually found his way out of the job. It was an easy job for him to maintain, and he got himself fired because he was doing so horribly at it. But if Harvey had just kind of gone along and did what they wanted at various points, he could have endeared himself a little bit towards fans. There were some people that were already done with him a couple of years ago, whether he pitched bad or they didn't like his attitude, or, you know, he didn't show up for a game one time. It's sort of a hard thing to sell to anybody. So, you know, because allegedly he was partying the day before. That's going to be a tough sell. People are not going to forget that, especially now. You know, 30 years ago, it's different in baseball. Well, but now you're caught with stuff like that.
The thing, too, is, and probably why there is a bit of a difference there, is what happened was, as that Mellow situation played out, Phil became a known commodity, and we knew that he was doing a horrible job, and the villain became Phil Jackson. In this situation, you have, not at the top, but at least Mickey Callaway is a guy who, for all that it's worth, it seems like he has been giving Harvey the best absolute chances in terms to try to revive this thing, because it's not best for Matt Harvey to go out there and continue to get tanked. So that is why at no point was this thing going to turn on Mickey Callaway. The point, though, as well with Harvey, is if he goes to one of these contending teams, he can't have that same BS attitude. And that is where it might feel like fool's gold, that he all of a sudden shows up in pinstripes and says, I'm team first. In the hypothetical sense that this guy comes to replace Jordan Montgomery for, say, 2 months, and let's just say Harvey's all right, not great, all right, serviceable. It's not out of the question that the Yankees would go back to Montgomery. And it's damn sure not out of the question in this hypothetical that Harvey would lose his mind again about the idea that he's going to be taken out of the rotation.
That's why I think ultimately he's not a fit for the Yankees, because he can't be guaranteed a starting spot. At a place like Miami or Detroit, they could conceivably be like, yeah, we're going to give you a month to see if you can earn to keep your spot in the rotation. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I'm talking this without specific knowledge of how they feel about their rotations currently, but Sure. There are a couple of teams. Those are a couple of types of teams that could talk to him about it. I don't even know what kind of relationship he and Jeter have. I know he admires Jeter greatly, but he also, when he was talking about his admiration of Jeter, it was more about the off-field stuff than it was the on-field stuff too. Like, yeah, that was what he intimated. So kind of shows you where his head was at. I've read a lot of stuff about Matt Harvey over the years and seen stories on it, and the way he ended up at University of North Carolina was in part due to him holding himself in high regard. Mm-hmm. You know, Matt Harvey wasn't initially a first round draft pick. He was a third round draft pick because he had Boris. He had a number in mind that he would go to college unless people hit his number. And that's why he started dropping in the draft. And I think it was, let me go back, I think it was the Angels that drafted him initially. I'm going, checking. It was, yeah, it was the Angels, third round of the 2007 draft. He had a number in mind of $2 million, and the Angels negotiated with him, got it up to 1.7. And he's like, that's it. That's not the number. I'm going to college. And he ended up in North Carolina and was miserable and admitted to being miserable. And then he pitched badly there for a while and then finally turned it around. He ended up becoming first-round draft pick of the Mets. And here we are, you know, nearly 10 years later from that, over 10 years later from that decision. So anyway, it's sort of sad. A lot of people are not going to cry alligator tears for that guy at all because of how he's acted. But it's an end of an era for sure. And the one thing I would say he did help earn them a pennant.
Can I ask you something on that quick point, though? Because I saw that sentiment, the idea that this is an end of an era. I feel like that is too grandiose a statement in terms of Matt Harvey. Like, their success is not so solely tied into Matt Harvey. Like, I guess perhaps it's just more so speaking, it's in terms of the Mets Matt Harvey era. But it does feel like one of those statements that is, like, team-wide. And, I mean, this team's still second in the NL East. Like, you can't be sat thinking too much about the Dark Knight.
Yeah, I think the teammates have checked out on him a long time ago. So I don't think anybody in Citi Field is concerned with it at all. They're moving on from a pitcher that wasn't effective and didn't really want to be there. So it helps the team head towards a common goal. Talk a little bit more about that. Preview today's games next on Fantasy Sports Today.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
I don't know what this is.
It's a new day.
Producer Pete Considori trying on some new stuff here. He's going to be on a little bit later in the show to talk hockey. And we'll give him a nice little send-off later. It's Pete's last day.
Gave Pete a big hug when I walked in.
With us. He's producing again tomorrow. He's moving on to projects he's passionate about, and we're excited for him, but we'll give him a send-off later on this show. But in any event,
I pissed Pete off right away when I came in because
interesting music.
He's down there. He's training a friend of mine, Rob, who also went to Iona because Iona continues to churn out the talent.
The proof is in the people at Iona.
True, but I got really excited and I
screamed. I know that that ad is probably older than you, but that used to be a radio ad locally here in New York. Oh. And there's a song.
Oh, now it's Move the World.
People at Iona. Yeah. All right.
They tell us to move the world.
Continue your terrible story.
But yeah, no, it's super good. Thanks. Make sure you clip this and post this solely to the internet. But I walked in. He immediately was like, "Why are you screaming?" So then I hugged him until he was nice to me again.
Yeah, I mean, you're full of vim and vigor, you know, early in the morning. You're fired up. Pete's a little bit more muted early morning hours.
As much as I'm going to miss Pete, I feel a little bit safer because I felt like he wanted to kill me every morning sometimes because I'd come in far too loud for his liking.
Yeah, you come in hot. I would come in hot, too, and I knew he didn't like it, but I'd do it just to, you know, to try and find a balance. So, anyway, we'll talk to him a little bit later. Let's see. What was I going to talk about? Major League Baseball. Oh, yeah, Yanks. So, watched the Yanks last night. Fell asleep at the wrong time because I fell asleep at the bottom of the ninth, so the Yankees won. I thought it was did it go extras or did they win in the bottom of the ninth?
I believe they won in the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah, okay. So that's exactly when I fell asleep. Right when the Indians tied it. Right when the Indians tied it in the top of the ninth. And I knew I remember falling asleep when the Yankees had a couple of guys on. And anyway, didn't see it. Chapman blew the save with a wild pitch. Now, did you watch this?
I actually didn't get to watch it. But I followed along, so I know what happened. But
yeah. So Chapman threw in the ninth inning when the Yankees had a one-run lead. They were up 6-5 at the time. Two horrendous wild pitches. One hit the backstop on a fly. Nobody in the world would have a chance to catch it. He throws 100 miles an hour. It was several feet out of the strike zone and hit the backstop on a fly. The second one was like a rising fastball out of the zone, and Sanchez misses it. But I had a little debate with friends, and I'm sure the debate was all over Twitter. Sanchez isn't good behind the plate. Yes. He's got a good arm. Threw somebody out stealing, caught Jose Ramirez stealing a third last night, I believe. But the problem is he has a really hard time pass balls and maybe not blocking certain pitches. And this pitch, he didn't even get his glove on it. It hit the umpire in the mask and deflected off. The tying run comes home to score. But I, look, as much as I just criticized Sanchez, and I don't think he's good behind the plate, I don't think that was his fault. And Chapman got mad at him. Like, Chapman barked at him a little bit, basically saying he should have caught it. At least that was David Cone's thought, and that was Michael Kay's thought. And I sort of thought that, too, that Chapman was mad at Sanchez. But, I mean, it was a horrendous pitch. It was a wild pitch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think people, if they're blaming Sanchez for that, I think they're understating how difficult a play that would be. 102-mile-an-hour rising fastball out of the zone.
Oh, yeah.
It's not where the location was supposed to be. You want him to catch it. You just get it near the target. That's sort of my thought process. And anyway, he blows the save there. The CC pitched a nice game, too. And the bullpen fell apart. Gave up six in the eighth and ninth innings. That was Dave Robertson gave up a three-run bomb, I believe it was. Let me just double-check that. Yeah, Bradley Zimmer. Oh, he hit it off. Zimmer hit a home run off of Shreve. Yeah, Jose Ramirez. That's right. He hit the two-run homer to tie it in the bottom of the eighth. So in any event, Yankees do win. A bunch of stats put up last night. So Jose Ramirez goes 3-for-4. He has the home run and the two RBIs.
He's starting to heat up.
Yan Gomez 1-for-3, couple of runs scored. On the Yankee side of things, Gleyber Torres hit his first career home run. Nice shot, three-run homer. Aaron Judge hit a solo shot last night. So Judge is 2-for-4, two ribbies, runs scored. He's currently hitting .305. Didi Gregorius 0-for-5 last night, avoided an injury on a freaky play at second base. So Dave Cone made a good point, and he's not the first person to say it. I know I'm bouncing around this game a little bit, but they had a shift on last night. I can't remember the player who hit it, but Lindor is running from first to second, and they have the shift on. It's Gregorius, basically, he's shading over to the right field side of the bag on second base. So he's now on the second base side. And then you have Torres is playing sort of like a deeper second base, and then obviously at first is Neil Walker last night. And the ball is hit right near Gregorius. So he picks it up, and there's a mad dash because there's obviously nobody to cover second. There's a mad dash to second for him to either tag Lindor, tag the bag, whatever. He ends up tagging Lindor. Lindor comes sliding in, trying to dive / slide around him, and he ends up kicking Didi in the face. It wasn't brutal. He didn't catch him with a knee. It wasn't a concussion scenario, but it obviously hurt, and he was down for a bit, got up, stayed in the game. But Dave Cone made a good point in that the shift is working clearly overall, and that's why they're shifting. They're getting more outs. But in scenarios like that, where it's sort of a classic double play scenario, would they be better served to not put the shift on and turn the double play there? Because to ask Didi to turn a double play on that is virtually impossible. he'd have to run to the bag and then fire back to first. Like, right. There's just too much time. We already know a limited amount of time that you have to turn a 4-6 or a 6-4-3 double play. And it effectively eliminated the opportunity for a double play. So if Torres, I mean, it was a play that Torres could have ranged over, definitely tossed to Didi. They get a 4-6-3. So I wonder at one point they're going to re-examine in double play scenarios if they should take the shift off.
No, that makes a lot of sense because what's the point of the – I mean, to me, like the shift, obviously it works, right? But sometimes that is kind of outthinking it, right? Like, and again, as you said, I don't remember whom the hitter was. Maybe it was Kipnis or something like that. But in that scenario, it's kind of like outthinking the room. Like if the double play is in play there, then maybe you don't need the shift in that specific scenario.
Yeah. So – anyway, something to think about.
Can I
I'll ask Tony about it a little bit later. So Stanton goes finish the box score. Stanton goes 1-for-4 last night. Sanchez 1-for-4. He hits a solo home run off of Tomlin. So RBI for Sanchez there. Neil Walker 2-for-3. Miguel Andujar 2-for-5. He gets a ribby. And Gleyber Torres, obviously the 3-run homer. He's 2-for-4. With the 3 RBIs. Tomlin goes 7 innings, gave up 4 earned. Sabathia, 6 innings, does not give up a run, 7 strikeouts. Nice outing for Sabathia. They waste it with Robertson and Chapman both blowing saves last night because they both blew a lead. But Chapman gets the win because the Yankees scored in the bottom of the ninth. So, anyway, that's it for that box score. Kev, what's your question?
Well, I was just going to say, miss this Yankees run now. I believe it's they've won 13 of their last 14 games. I wasn't actually checking the standings because, I mean, it's, you know, it's now early May, but it was April and everything like that, and it's not, you know, it doesn't matter too much. But I didn't realize the position that the Yankees had put themselves in this run, and that's probably on me for not realizing what 13 wins in 14 games is going to do for you. But the fact that the Yankees now have the second best record in baseball, the most runs scored in the league, and they're just one game behind the Red Sox, caught me off guard when I looked at it, to be honest.
I've been tracking it. I mean, the Sox were 17-2.
Well, I was told the Red Sox were never going to lose again.
Now they are 23-9, so they've gone obviously 6-7 from that standpoint. They picked up a W last night in Texas. But, yeah, the Yankees have basically wiped out that lead. They're playing next week, so it's going to be a fairly big series for early May. But it's on. You know, these two are going to race to the finish, I think, eventually. I mean, they're already have a 4.5-game cushion, the Yankees do, on Toronto. Long season, a lot of things could go wrong, go differently. But to your point, the two best records in baseball right there. Arizona right with them at 21-11. So, Yankees have virtually wiped out that lead, but they haven't wiped it out completely yet. We'll see what happens when they play next week. I believe it's up in Boston. So,
to your point right there, just quickly, because you, and again, you mentioned it is very early. It does feel like two of the teams that are the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Angels, and the Astros, like two of those teams are division winners. The other two are probably your wild card playoff game. And again, it's incredibly early. Of course, anything could happen, whether it be a big injury, a big slump. But it does seem like those teams are probably going to be able to. And it's not like there's a huge gap. I mean, the Astros are only a game and a half up on the Mariners. And you know, it's not like the Blue Jays are all too far back. It seems like perhaps those teams are going to be able to pull clear away, if you will, as the season continues on.
Yeah, I mean, the Indians aren't playing well right now, so we have to see what they can give you.
I feel like they'll have the Central regardless, but the rest of the Central, I mean, the Yankees are like 9 games up on the second team in the Central.
Yeah, the Yankees, the Central's a disaster. Detroit, I mean, everybody has a losing record except for Cleveland, so Detroit, Minnesota, Kansas City, and the White Sox. The White Sox are 12 games under, as are the Royals, and Minnesota's 6 games under, Detroit's 5 games under. So it's pretty early in the season for the teams to be that bad. We shall see. I mean, the Indians could coast to a division title and probably be .500. So
I also realize, just less sorry.
The one thing I'll say is earlier this week, the Yankees taking 3 of 4 from Houston was
– Oh, yeah.
pretty incredible. It had a playoff type of atmosphere, which, you know, you don't really get in the first week of May. But those teams were battling it out, and the Yankees came out on top this time. I would imagine, you know, getting over the hump and beating Keuchel and all that kind
of
stuff.
It was big.
A nice little mental fodder for them as well.
No, the way they did it, absolutely. The only other thing I was going to say, just because we were talking about them so much before, is I had not realized how much the Mets had slipped up. Like, they're not only a game and a half off the Braves now for the top of the division. Also, you know, not being able to create a big gap between them and the Nationals while they're banged up is probably problematic, but also now a negative run differential. Actually, can I ask you about the Bryce Harper comments? Did you see the...
Give them to me specifically. I want to make sure I'm commenting on the right
I don't have the exact comments, but it was essentially, he was like, I'm excited about Rendon and Murphy coming back because this is basically a minor league team out here. And there was a lot of people who seemed to feel as if it was incredibly disrespectful to the remainder of his teammates, and they seemed to take it very serious. My read on it was different. To me, it seemed like it was somewhat of a joke. Like, I didn't think that all of a sudden Max Scherzer or Strasburg or these everyday guys were going to be offended. And I didn't think that the
But that's not who he's referring to there.
Right, but I mean, I guess perhaps, you know, the two guys that would be, you know, come up would feel somewhat hurt. But so is that the reaction you take? Because I didn't think that it was a comment made to be taken so seriously.
Yeah, I mean, they've won six games in a row, so they're not, you know, they're not in terrible straits. But here's what I'll say. When it comes to stuff like this, yeah, it does seem insensitive. And it's probably not something I would say, but Harper is a little bit more of an outspoken guy. The only thing that matters is if those guys in the locker room know how he meant it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bryce Harper is going to go through his career, whether it continues in Washington or moves on to another city after this year. There's going to be teammates that aren't going to like Bryce Harper.
He's already had that
guy,
right? With him and Lester.
And I just think that's always
Lester,
the type of
Papelbon.
Guy. Papelbon is a totally unlikable player in his own right. So it made no sense. It made perfect sense that those guys would get into it. And honestly, Papelbon seemed like an old stick in the mud to some people. He was right in that scenario. Harper wasn't running it out. In his mind, he was right. He's going by old school baseball ethics. Harper didn't run something out, so he told him about it. That's kind of the way baseball teams operate. You could probably say, hey, John, like, tap the brakes. You know, everything was settled at that point during the season. We don't really need to be running everything out in late September, because that's when it happens. So anyway, that's another debate for another day. But I would say that the only thing that matters is the guys in the room and what they think of Bryce.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And if those guys at the end of the bench are like, screw this guy, I'm busting my ass to get here. Yeah, I'm not as good as Anthony Rendon, but, you know, I'm here busting my ass every day. And who is he to say that? Then they'll be offended. That's all there is to it. But if Harper is a good guy to them and he's joking with them and he's a little frustrated that they don't have their A squad out there, and everybody's on the same page, and so be it. You know, you just want to show your teammates some respect. We're going to talk about that in the football sense in the next hour. By the way, I want to preview that Ryan Talbot from the Bill, from Bill's Updates on Twitter, is going to be joining us in the 10 o'clock hour. In fact, just after the break, he'll be with us. We're going to ask him some questions about Josh Allen and the whole thing. But to put a bow on Major League Baseball for the day, I want to tell you exactly the starters you got coming up for the day, big matchups. We have Trevor Bauer going against Sonny Gray early. Who else we have? Tanner Roark is going for the Nationals. Who else? Bettis for the Rockies, Steven Matz for the Mets, Kenta Maeda throwing today. We go down. Eddie Rodriguez for the Red Sox at 3-0. Charlie Morton at 4-0 going up against the D-backs. Charlie Morton versus Zach Greinke. That's probably your number one matchup of the day. So Jameson Taillon against Chacin, Pirates Brewers. So got a whole bunch of guys out there. McCarthy for the Braves at 4-0. Brandon McCarthy looking to go 5-0. It's just crazy how he's bounced around the league and continues.
This is why baseball is so wild. Just stuff like that.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, he's 34 years old. He's bouncing around to a new team. He's 4-0 with a 3 ERA, 25 strikeouts in 32 innings. The whip isn't great, but we'll see. You know, Brandon McCarthy's the kind of guy, he can go through stretches like this, and you just sort of wonder if he's a sell-high candidate in fantasy. So we'll come back. We're going to talk to Ryan Talbot about the Bills, Josh Allen, Jermaine Edmonds. Are they on the right track? Are they blowing it up before it gets better? We'll come back and talk about that. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be back right after this.